things have been a success. We have clean air now, so we're hoping that we can relax those restrictions to allow the unused capacity in the parking supply that we have in the central city moving forward. At the same time, we're increasing flexibility. We want to bring those imposed parking ratios, maximum parking ratios on all development and all uses, and bring those down significantly, about 30%. That will help us meet our most split, and it's a bit of a counterbalance to the increased flexibility of the uses of what we have. And continue to adjust and keep investing in multimodal transportation. New limitations on new surface parking lots, we're discussing that with our committee. Today, you could build up to 20 spaces in a new development in the core, I believe, which is the downtown, and up to 60 in the areas outside of the downtown. At this point, we're saying no new surface parking lot with new development, with the exception being in the industrial zones, in the central east side and lower Alpina, because they have a special provisions, you know, for industrial use, and they may not be able to support that sort of investment. And reduce the number of parking sectors from 26 to 6. You can see on page 27 the map, very convoluted, and would be much simpler to administer and to write the code. We think that if we put all that in place, we would have hopefully less parking built, because what you can build, it'd be better used. Maybe a company, instead of having to build parking, it could tap into a lot across the street or a surface, somebody's garage, you know, maybe smart park at night, to be able to have less parking built and actually more affordable development for housing and for commercial use, among other things.
So when you're talking about increased flexibility for existing parking, are we including churches who might be able to rent out their lots?
Yes.
And in the parking permits, are we going to allow residents to rent out their driveway?
Yes.
No.
Yeah. Actually, hold on. The proposal is for residential uses to rent out their stalls, yes, within, if you're in a commercial zone. If you're a residential zone, you're not allowed to have a commercial operation for in a residential zone.
So I would suggest that's something to ask the committee.
Yeah,
if it's
we
just
will ask.
Somebody who's maybe an employee of the business on Hawthorne who you either allow, or if you allow, that's allowed, but if you wanted to rent your driveway, you're not renting your on-street permit, but you're renting your driveway in a permit district. I'm not sure that that's a problem.
Yeah, we're talking here about the central city, so it's not applicable to single-family residential. It would only be applicable to the commercial zones, the CX, you know, the EX that are in the central city plan district.
We'll add it to the list of things that we're exploring.
Yeah, I know that's an issue on the Hill at OHSU.
At this point, we're not able.
So I assume if you have a stall and a secure parking garage, you can't rent that out.
You could in the future. Actually, technologies already, applications are being developed to be able to match supply and demand. And it happens, you know, we have no way of tracking it. And in this way, we're opening up the opportunity to tap into unused resources and use parking. How much will it happen?
Security issues around?
Well,
like
yeah,
that?
To do that, it will be up to each building, each property manager or condo association to do that. Do you want to open up, or your office, do you want to open up that to strangers, basically?
So you have to do it as a home.
Yeah. Some buildings can, you know, if they have separate entrances. Once you're in the garage, you can get inside the building, you probably have security issues and you will not do that. You know? But it may not happen in every case, but it's up to each individual property owner to determine that. And we would just be allowing it to happen by code, where commercial activity can happen. Yes, I needed to move fast on this. So we'll come back with this, and we'll bring these comments to our committee. So here I want to make an introduction to Brian Canepa to talk about performance-based parking management. As I opened up an hour ago, we manage on-street parking to support short trips for visitors and support the retail environment. We have now a smart park meters. You see it better than the coins that we talked about in the 1930s, but the operations of it are not very much different. Council sets the rate, and the rate doesn't change for a long time, and it is applicable to large areas. So on page 39, you'll see that since 1969, we've adjusted the rate 7 times. Not exactly a dynamic model, and in many of these districts, and already some of these districts have different rates. For example, Lloyd District has a lower rate. So that's the central east side. So what we want to do is standardize this model use the technology that we have, just like in 1935, to better manage our system and provide better customer service. And the way that Smart Park is partly in that direction. In page 40, we do manage for visitors, but the rates, the all-day rate can be adjusted, and we use a performance measure, an occupancy performance of 85%, to be able to do that, and we can do that administratively, at PBAT. So that model now with the new technology is being applied in Seattle, San Francisco, Washington, D.C., I believe, and it's something that our committee, our Central City Committee, is very excited about and recommended that we pursue. So we want to provide you with what that looks like.
Quick question. Mm-hmm. Why do I get to park for free after 6 o'clock a block from Metro, but it's 7 o'clock downtown? What's the distinction?
That's interesting, because there are also places near Metro that it's 10 o'clock for the convention center. So, you know, I think we try to implement a new district according to the uses and the peak periods. But the reason that there's a lot of interest in what Brian's going to present is that once we put something in, it's very hard to make changes for the hours or the pricing. And so hopefully this would actually help if that's no longer the right time.
So you're proposing that the public garage rates would no longer be linked to the on-street meter rates?
Is that actually, we want to link them better, mm-hmm, so that it works as a system.
And but they would be different. They could be different.
They are.
I thought they were. I thought it was $1.60 an hour in the garages.
Right now, it's somewhat accidentally a nice accident that they are the first 2 hours matched, but it isn't consistently that way, and it isn't by a specific time and policy. That is definitely something the committee would want.
I thought it was.
The policy should be that it should be actually you want to win. Encourage people to use the garage rather than drive around on the street. So you'd want to have the price be slightly lower in the garage. It has not worked out that way now, and that's actually something we're aiming to restore.
I don't support that the director can adjust the all-day rate administratively. That is current. It always comes to council, though, which is part of the budget. It's listed.
Oh, I don't know when it changes, but the PBOT director currently has the administrative authority to raise, to manage the rates in the Smart Park garages. And it will come to council in our fee schedule, because we have to have the appropriation to recognize the revenue coming in.
We've had multiple robust discussions about fees at parking garages, and I'm going to get blamed for whatever you choose to do, so even though I'm not the PBOT commissioner. So it seems like, although I had recognized it, it's challenging to get through the budget process and the decision-making process for meter rates, that's something certainly that the business community cares a lot about, and so do downtown shoppers and parkers.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, City Council. Again, Brian Canepa from Nelson Nygaard, and full disclosure, I'm a Californian. So I'm gonna lay that out there right now. Recover. So today, I'll make my presentation as quick as possible here, but cover all the key points about performance-based parking management. And the agenda is relatively simple, Mauricio already did a good job of hitting the highlights, but again, just touching on some really key points about your current program, talking about what performance-based pricing really is, where it's been applied in comparable areas. So we're going to look at Seattle, and then what the committee recommendation was. So as Mauricio talked about, what you were just discussing is the fact that right now you actually do have a pretty robust public parking supply that's both on and off street, but the two don't necessarily talk to each other as well as they could. Now on the on-street supply, you do have metered parking in different areas, and those parking rates do differ a little bit between areas. You also have some varied time limits, which you just discussed, and those time limits are adjusted or can be adjusted for a variety of reasons. Now, these management techniques result in a particular parking demand. So on the next slide, you'll see the peak parking demand in various areas. And with your current way of managing parking, what you're seeing is that demand is exceeding what we would consider to be acceptable. So that's what you, or another way of saying this is when you drive around, these blocks are full. They're exceeding the common threshold of 85% that we tend to use. So on any given block, you can see from this table, most areas during peak time, you have 0 to maybe 1 space at most open on a given block. So next slide.
Oh. You show peak times of 12 p.m. in the entertainment district. Isn't that 12 a.m.?
12 p.m. is noon. Yeah.
That's the peak in the entertainment?
Lunchtime. And one thing to note, too, is depending on the district, peak times will vary. So some districts will have peaks around lunchtime, which is very common, especially in more business districts. Other areas might have peaks in the evening hours around restaurant dining time.
We might have done this in midweek, so Fridays and Saturdays. The peak may be in the evening as well. They may have a double peak.
Yeah. And parking demand does ebb and flow throughout the day.
Yeah.
Yes,
they do. Just a quick question. Leo, will we at some point have an app that before you go on a trip, you can go on the app and find out where the best place to park is? Yeah, so smart park. I mean, you get off the bridge and there's a big sign telling you what the vacancy is in the various smart parks. It's wonderful to have an app that can help you, you're going to help them for a benefit. Here's where you should park your car.
Thank you. Yeah, we'll look at it. If I thought maybe you were talking about, you know, on the street, it would require a lot of technology to be put in the ground, like LiDAR strips and stuff. Yeah, that's a great idea.
Sure.
Yeah, they are.
We want to open up the policy to have that sort of technology help us in the future.
It seems like the parking meters, since they're going to be all cell phone activated, that you know whether somebody knows whether there's a car parked at it or not, or at least it's been paid for at the time.
Yeah, the new meters out there right now can sense whether they're single-head or multi-space, whether a car is parked in that space or not. So I'll talk about the technology in a second, actually. So what is performance-based pricing, and why do we, you know, what's the point of it? As I discussed before, 85% is kind of that magic perfect point that you have, where on a given block, if you have, for example, 10 parking spaces, you'll have 1 or 2 parking spaces available. And what performance-based pricing says is make your pricing not too hot, not too cold. You only want 1 to 2 spaces open. And you only really want to price when you absolutely need to, and you want to be able to change or have the price at the lowest possible price to make sure that you have 1 or 2 spaces open. So what do I mean by that? If you are charging $1.50 an hour and half your spaces are open, guess what? You're charging too much. If you're charging $1.50 and all of your spaces are occupied at peak hour, you're charging too little. So it's really performance-based, is really adjusting to the demand that you're seeing on those given blocks. So next slide. And the technology behind it, you know, as Mauricio discussed before, has really made leaps and bounds, particularly in the past, I would say, 5 to 10 years, in that this performance-based parking approach is now actually possible because of the technology at our fingertips. Before, it was very difficult.
So you're talking about surge pricing on parking meters?
It's not necessarily surge pricing. It's essentially, I mean, it could be higher during peak times. It could be lower. I'll talk about that in a second.
I guess my question is this, do I know before I go downtown where the particular pricing is, or is it variable?
No, so that's a very good question. As a consumer of parking, you want to be able to know before you go how much you're going to be paying, right? Every day you don't want to show up and have it be completely different. So, for example, in the case of Seattle, they adjust their prices once per year. So it's not completely dynamic, as in it changes every day.
But I still have to walk around from one block to another and figure out which one's at $1.50 and which one's at $1.75?
No, not necessarily either. So, again, it depends on what model you adopt. In Seattle, for example, again, I know I'm kind of jumping the gun here, they do it based on zone. So they'll say this particular shopping district will have similar hours of operation and rates. You could theoretically do it block by block, but again, that becomes very complex then in terms of from a motorist perception. That was really for off-street purposes, but
we will go through a process in which we would determine what the natural parking demands would be and split the district that way.
In Seattle, does the typical person impacted by a dynamic pricing end up with the aggregate paying about the same annually? Or do I pay more or less?
It's actually relatively the same, and we found that
a little more one time, a little less. I'm sorry.
because the aggregate is what I'd be looking for as someone who, because of my job, has to park a lot. I'd be looking for, you know, at the end of the month, have I paid roughly the same in parking? A little more one time, a little less, but it's in the aggregate roughly the same.
It is, because you'll see some prices go up and some go down. It's actually pretty even. Seattle, when they did their last price adjustment this past year, it was almost the number of districts that went up was the same number of districts that went down. So you're correct. So anyways, in terms of the technology, though, the technology that we have right now makes it possible, so you can make these price adjustments without having to actually manually go out and tinker with each meter. You can do it electronically. And it's also intended to be convenient, user-oriented for the person to use. So that's why we have this pay-by-phone technology and things of that sort. Now, you'll see on this particular slide that there's this, quote, optional technology. In order to monitor things before, a lot of times they put these little disks in the ground. Those are no longer necessary. That's why I say now meters themselves can detect whether vehicles are parked there. So it provides the city with a huge store of very valuable data that we just simply didn't have access to before. And ultimately, this process, as you can tell, is very data-driven. You know, it's all about the numbers that you're collecting and information. So it's a very objective process. And you want to make it as transparent as possible. So all that information that you collect is publicly available. Everyone can see it. And at the end of the day, this is designed to be revenue neutral. This is not designed to make you money. Other cities in the past who have gone down the path of having their city council vote on rate increases, I'll give the city of Oakland as an example, increased parking rates during the recession because they wanted more revenue for the city. And that ended up leading to a large business backlash and damaged business as a whole. So, you know, ultimately, you're doing this to improve the environment, not necessarily as a revenue generator. But there's also other benefits in terms of transit reliability. We talked earlier about people circling for parking. Research shows that in an urban area like this, as many as one out of every three cars that you see on the street are cars that are circling for parking. So if you can remove those cars from having to constantly circle, I mean, that's costly in terms of time, it's costly in terms of gas, your bus service gets slowed down, et cetera. You're not only solving a parking problem, you're solving a traffic issue as well.
So that's, I mean, that's the idea of pricing so that there is one or two spaces open on a given block. Because if there's, we can expect that we wanted two spaces open, then people aren't circling around forever. If we're charging so little that everything's always full, then people circle around.
Exactly. And these actually ultimately really support the goals of the Central City Transportation Management Plan. So air quality, if you're going to be reducing circling for parking, you know, your CO2 emissions go down. It's economic development, because from a business standpoint, you don't have the same people sitting in spaces who are not actually shopping or frequenting your businesses. You actually have people cycling in and out. It meets your mode split goals and better because you actually increase transit reliability. In terms of linking it better with your off-street rates, it actually goes a long way towards equity, not only in terms of transit reliability because your transit riders actually get there sooner, but if you are going to be, let's say, in an area that you're going to be saying, oh, I'm going to raise my on-street rates a little bit, vast majority of places I've ever worked, your off-street rates come down. And so if you're concerned about employees trying to find affordable parking or things of that sort, that's oftentimes the case. Most cities that we work in, we find that municipalities tend to overprice their off-street parking because they try to link the cost of constructing that parking rather than the actual demand for that parking. That makes sense. So next slide. So in terms of how Seattle is probably the best comparable example. There are jurisdictions across the country that do this, mostly big cities now. But their goals are very much in line with what you would have, or what you do have, I should say, in your CCTMP. And it's really about allowing customers to be able to find spaces, or motors, I should say, when they need them, being able to conserve fuel, reduce your environmental impact. And ultimately, their directive is relatively simple, and it's the director shall establish a goal, shall establish parking rates to ensure that one to two parking spaces are available on each given block within a certain minimum and maximum. So they say your minimum parking price can be no lower than $1 an hour, and your maximum can be no higher than $4 an hour. So they kind of set boundaries on what the director could do. Next slide. And so what they do is they conduct an annual study. So every year they go out and they manually collect data on all of the metered parking spaces that they have. And in, as I mentioned earlier, in 2014, their prices went up in 9 districts and went down in 7 districts. And they also adjust time limits sometimes. So there are, they found that there are some districts where the nightlife is really bumping. And they say, gosh, why is our parking shut off at 7 p.m. when, in fact, that's actually the busiest time of day? So they actually increased the hours of operation in a few areas to 8 p.m. And they use this symbology to be able to communicate publicly with people about what changes may be occurring, whether prices are going up or down. They have a great signage system about, hey, here's value parking that you can find. They have a little check mark that they use. If you go to the next slide, actually. This is actually really, they do a fantastic job in terms of signage and communication with the community, keeping it very simple. So using the traditional P sign for things, making it color-oriented. Oh, sorry.
Value parking is within the family of the publicly owned parking?
Yes.
Well, I'm all for that. And I'd be willing to change my behavior if I knew where the value parking was. And in fact, I don't know why we don't take better advantage of the parking we have at the Rose Quarter and create an incentive for people to drop their cars there and take the MAX into downtown. Because I think it's not used for long swatches, and that could be outstanding value parking.
Okay, I'll move along here. So the next slide then. So again, this is just going back to what I talked about before. So these are the zones that Seattle set up. Doesn't mean that you have to exactly replicate it, but again, you want to make it easy for the user. You don't want to necessarily create different prices on every block, or else it just gets completely way too complicated. But Seattle has broken it into these zones. They have roughly 12,000 meters across the city that are covered by this. And, oh, sorry. And their process for setting pricing is very transparent. And the way it works is every year they go out and do a count. So let's say on a given block, if they say, hey, our occupancy is between 70 and 85%, golden, don't change anything, everything is fine. Between 65 or 70%, 85 to 90% on the fringes, they say, you know what, let's wait a year. We'll see how it goes. We want to be cautious about it so it doesn't lead to wild fluctuations in prices or sudden ones. But if things are way over-occupied, so if you have a 95% occupied block or a 50% occupied block, then you have changes are made that year. But again, it's only once a year, so it's not necessarily every day. And lastly, this is really kind of the core product that a lot of times you see that come on a district-by-district basis. So you can see that what they produce, you can see the data that they're using. It's done in a very pleasing visual way that people, I think, can easily take in. It's very symbol-oriented, and it allows people to see the data behind it and why changes are potentially being made one way or another, or if no changes are being made, which often happens. So the committee recommendation at the end of the day was to develop a performance-based parking system, establishing performance targets behind these. Really importantly, coordinating the on and off-street parking. So as we discussed before, you know, if off-street parking is overpriced in some areas, reducing that and adjusting as necessary. And let me flip over to here. Let's see. And so, yeah, so ultimately staff is seeking council direction to explore this performance-based system.
One question about Seattle. I haven't heard noises from the north. Is this relatively well accepted by the business community there, the storefronts, the neighborhoods? What's the political temperature of this issue in Seattle after how many years of using this system?
So this was originally adopted by the city in 2010. Okay. First year was 2011. So the benefit that Portland has is that Seattle's kind of gotten, you've given them the chance to kind of run through it and experience the problem. Same thing with San Francisco, same thing with City of Berkeley and other locations. But to answer your question, though, initially when they started going into the program, they didn't have the same system in place they do today that they did, for example, back in 2012, 2013. So when they were initially testing this out and improving the process, yeah, they did have some problems with businesses, which is why they refined the process the way they did. So I think they actually have a very good rapport with businesses now, or much better than they used to. Same situation in San Francisco I can speak to. Initially, when they rolled out the program, businesses were very skeptical of it. It's now very supported. Same thing in Berkeley, on their Go Berkeley program. So it's something that I still firmly believe needs to be communicated effectively. You can't just drop it on people's laps and say you're going to take it.
But skepticism largely because people thought it was just a smokescreen or a Trojan horse for getting more revenue rather than managing the market.
Yeah, I mean, oftentimes that is the case. It's that this is an attempt at a money grab rather than other goals, and it's very important for when you're communicating this with the business community to say, look, this is really designed to help you as a business. It's not designed to generate money. Although if you do generate revenue from the program, you always can push that back into the community in a variety of ways.
From that experience there and then our own, I mean, we've been through this a couple of times with the parking lid and then CCTMP. It was once said of Elsa Coleman, who was the deputy director of PBOT, who led the CCTMP, that never has one woman made more men rich over their objections, because all those business people were objecting to, you know, the parking regimen. And of course, what it did is circulate more people through the central city and less cars, and it took a while for people to see that. So the more we can bring people along at the front end rather than having to prove that we were right, mm-hmm. through a hail of controversy, I like that other plan better.
Right. No, absolutely.
So we're in Seattle and trying to get that.
Absolutely. And everyone here, I mean, staff here, you have a very capable bunch of people who communicate effectively with Mayor Catherine Snyder up in Seattle, as well as the SF Park people down in San Francisco. So I think you have a really good knowledge base here about kind of the lessons learned.
Parking meter rates? Because it seems like implicit in all this is an assumption that we're going to go to 24-hour operations. Is that correct for our meters?
That's not a, no, I don't think so. Not yet.
No. Well, thank you. I'm Judith Gray. I'm a supervising planner with PBOT. I've met each of you over the years in different places, but this is my first time here as a city employee. Leah hired me about a year ago, so I have completed my probation period. My most recent probation period. So this topic is really something that we weren't anticipating in our work. It's just it was an issue that was revealed in our analysis that we did for the policy work for the downtown parking system. So I have my own notes here. One of the reasons, the reason that this is on the agenda today is because we are scheduled to come to you for a hearing on November 5th. So the main thing that I'm hoping for is if there are specific issues or questions that you want to make sure you get a chance to learn about, that I can be prepared for that at that time. So this will be somewhat abbreviated. I can bring more information. I'll expect to bring a little more information in November. Anyway, this slide is one that Brian showed you before, the weekday on-street parking occupancy chart. And that is the first slide that you see. And, you know, I was a parking consultant for a lot of years before I joined the city. And this would be the slide that would be the first thing if I was with any city to indicate you probably need to do some changes in your parking system. This tells you the overall average for downtown parking occupancy each hour of the day, going through the day. The red line is the counts that were conducted in October of last year. And so it shows there's a little, the dark tracking line. The red line going, there's a red line indicating what 85% is. What we found was that there are two peaks, as was mentioned earlier. There's a lunchtime peak and an evening peak. And that overall the system was at or above 85% for 6 hours of the day. That blue line that's right underneath it is our counts from 2008. I actually did those counts when I was a consultant and working with Mauricio and Grant. What's important about that is, first of all of the hours over 85%. That's very rare. It's it's a sign of a place people want to be, so it's a good sign. It's a good problem. To have two peaks is a sign of a strong downtown. We have an evening and a day and a midday. Not every city has that. Nonetheless, it shows really excessive demand for several hours of the day. And importantly, those 2008 counts probably informed a meter rate increase in 2009. And so when I look at this, I see that since 2009, the parking occupancy is higher almost the entire day than it was 6 years ago. And that has overcome both a meter rate increase and a recession. So this is very strong demand showing here. It's not surprising when you see how much growth has happened. The parking occupancy over 85%, the next slide. I want to just, you know, Brian talked about this, but this is not an arbitrary measure. I call it parking nirvana. If I'm a business owner in a downtown area, I would like it to always be at 85% full. That means I've got an active environment, but there's still room for the next car. Remember, the chart before showed 90% during the peak, but that's an average overall. There are some areas, several areas, that are peaking at about 95% full. If I'm a business owner, what's happening is my customers are very frustrated by the time they get to me, if they do manage to get to me. Other things have already been mentioned, so there's the customer experience, but there's also traffic congestion and carbon emissions, safety, the distracted drivers cruising around for parking. There are different estimates. I believe that one out of three cars is looking for parking. That's probably about right in my just observations in downtown Portland. Whether it's one out of three, two out of three, whatever the number is, we know there's actually no economic value being provided by those trips. They're just circling. So the next slide shows a slide that was already presented showing the recent times that we've changed meter rates. I won't, you know, since 1969? So about 45 years, 7 meter rate changes. Obviously not a dynamic system, not a responsive system. Moving on to the next slide, we'll show a summary of comparing the smart park and the on-street parking prices. This is what you were getting at, Commissioner Saltzman. Right now, the smart park garages are $1.60 an hour for their first 2 hours. Then they go to $1.80 and then $2. So that means that for people who want to park for a little longer, actually have a price incentive to park on street instead of in the smart park garage. That is entirely contrary to our policy objectives, and actually the policy objectives in basically any downtown I've ever experienced. The on-street parking is the priority for customers and short-term parking. So there's an imbalance, and that probably is because we have been not very responsive. We haven't made a change in the on-street pricing for so many years, but the smart parks have adjusted a couple of times. They are, I can tell you, for the many years that I've worked in some relationship to Portland parking, they are much more aligned now than they were back in 1997 when I did my very first project. But they're still out of balance right now. But yeah, I actually have some numbers that Smart Park has adjusted prices twice since 2009. So they have a little bit more dynamic.
There's not many places where you can park for 5 hours downtown.
True. That's true. Yeah, the majority of the spaces are much shorter time frame.
There are some threes, though, and there's even in the third hour, there's an imbalance.
A few threes, a few fives, but not many, you're right, which is good. Here's a timeline. You've seen it once before. What I just want to illustrate with this is that this is a near-term operations issue of the rate of the parking. So this was not, compared to what we've been hearing from Grant and from Mauricio and Brian, those are long-term policies. We are talking about policies that need to work for 20 years or so, or at least give us a direction. The demand and the meter rate issue came up in the analysis, so it really was out of scope for the work we were doing with our policy committee. We briefed our policy committee on it, asked them how they wanted to be engaged, and they decided they should form a subcommittee to work on it separately. So that's what we did, and I want to say that I'm really appreciative of that they took those extra evenings and that extra time to get up to date on the issues, because this was June and July, it was really beautiful out, and they were already busy with the policy group. So I'm appreciative. We had 13 people who did show up and help us with that. The next slide shows a map of the downtown district. So I just want to be clear, this is what we were working on. So the purpose of showing you this slide is to emphasize that this was related to the downtown district only, which is shown in purple. This was not related to Lloyd District or Northwest or other areas. So just to put the boundaries on it, And then the next slide was something that we actually printed out and gave to everybody at their initial discussion. This is our current policy, the purpose statement that we have in our current policy for the downtown meter district, which is good, sound policy, I think. I don't usually read slides, but the on-street parking system in commercial districts is managed to support the economic vitality of the district by encouraging parking turnover, improving circulation, encouraging use of off-street parking, maintaining air quality, and promoting the use of alternative modes. These are things we've already discussed here today. So it really does reinforce kind of the message that improving parking turnover, we really are trying to get those shorter-term cars parked on street and move the others into the smart parks. I won't go into more about those, but I think we've talked about them. So the key findings, we actually looked at quite a lot of other things. We had some help from BPS, PDC, who so Bureau of Planning and Sustainability and Portland Development Commission helping us with some other issues that we looked at. But the main findings that really make the point here, that indicate the need for a meter rate increase, are these. The occupancy levels over 85% for so many hours of the day, especially. The fact that it's been such a long time since we've adjusted the prices, that in and of itself isn't a reason to do it, but that's why it's not surprising that we are so over capacity right now. And then the imbalance between the on-street and the smart park garages, that is also an issue. So the subcommittee recommendation, and this is the one that will be coming in your hearing on November 5th, was to increase the hourly rate in downtown to $2. That's a 40 cent an hour increase. They considered 20 cents, 40 cents, 60 cents. These were all with somewhat qualitative, a little bit of technical evaluation of what the impacts would be. There are some estimates of elasticity of demand with respect to price. I love talking about that stuff, but it's probably not worth more time than that. Concerns or priorities from the subcommittee and their recommendation was that this should not happen before the holiday shopping season, so a January implementation. And also, every single person who went around the table without being asked emphasized that they would like to not do this process again. They would rather we go to a data-driven, performance-based parking management program. That was challenging because we were here asking them to make a recommendation about our current meter rates at the same time having a conversation about sort of going to a data-driven program. And so there was a little bit of confusion. It's just that we knew that that policy direction is still underway, could be quite some time from implementation, don't know what your direction will be, and we had a situation to be dealt with now. But all of them, whether they thought it was the reason that it should be the highest end of the price or the lower end of the price, felt that in the future it should be much more demand or data-driven. Thank you. I would hope so. And that was actually one of their earlier recommendations was to this at this time I'm not proposing anything there. I mean right. And currently the hourly rates do have to come to council. Those are not things that happen.
What's your prediction if you bump it up to $2, for example, across the street there's private parking 8 hours a day, $11. What's the natural effect of raising car rates?
Well, that's really different because those 8 hours a day those are all day rates. These are for short term parking, so really should be for 1, 2, 3 hour space stays for the most part.
So we haven't seen in the past when we raise car rates for short term parking, it doesn't necessarily have an impact on the longer term.
I think that there should be a relationship. It gets this is part of a system, so. There are in specific areas where we want to think about, first of all, we never want to restrict parking in a way that actually discourages anybody from coming downtown. We don't want that. What we're trying to do is have the right balance of options for people to make the choice that works within a system. And so in some cases, what you'll see, in fact, the next two slides have to do with other issues that were raised by subcommittee members. And so I'm going to, if you don't mind, I'll wait and get to that one. So the first one was from the representative of the downtown retailers who was representing both the Portland Business Alliance and Pioneer Place, was concerned about the perception for our customers if we increase the rates. This is, of course, the most common concern that we hear in any downtown when we talk about any kind of parking restriction. So it's important. At the same time, remember that 85% occupancy threshold is about providing a better customer parking environment. We also have smart park garages available if people are very price sensitive or want a somewhat longer stay. The more important issue was that in looking at some of the other data analysis we had done, which I've got on the next slide, this is, again, thinking about the customer perception, the customer experience. We had done some analysis to see what the average duration of stay is for people who are parking on street. So this chart shows for different types of spaces. The red line, the red bar, is for one-hour spaces. The orange is for 90-minute spaces. So the data analysis was done by type of space. But you'll see that for 1 hour, 90-minute, and two-hour spaces, really the average duration of stay was about 90 minutes. So in conjunction with the change to the meter rate to get to that 85% occupancy level, the subcommittee recommended a staff change, because this is something that operations currently can do, to change the mix of time stay limits on the street, just to make it a better customer service environment. We have too many one-hour spaces, basically, to meet the needs. We don't need as many one-hour spaces. I might have hoped that having those one-hour spaces would result in more 30-minute meetings, but that hasn't happened. So what means is that it's not even serving the needs for meetings, for lunches, for shopping, for any other kind of short-term trip. That is what we think makes a better mix of changes in the parking system. The next issue had to do with Old Town. We heard this from the representative of Old Town, Chinatown, who was representing her constituents, that the pricing was a challenge for those businesses. That's actually one of the areas that had some of the highest demand. They have a lot of nightlife. One of the things we found about Old Town was when looking at the Smart Park Garage in Old Town, the Portland Development Commission had just happened to have done a survey of people using the garage and had found that about 60% of the people using the garage are employees, either using monthly permits or using paying the all-day rate. Only 2% of the people using the garage were actually downtown to shop. So the problem with the commuter parking pattern is to come in around 9 o'clock, and it's filling up by 9:30. By the time customers are coming for lunch, there's no parking available in the Old Town garage. A staff response to that, which we can do and has already begun, is to increase the daily rate at the Smart Park Garage to discourage, to keep some of that space open for customers to come in at 10 or 11. So that's kind of working the working with both parts of the parking system to the priority use.
So that brings up a concern I have about equity. I mean, you've been looking at cars as regardless of, if car is a car, regardless of who's driving it. And so an employee who might need to commute to work and park at the Smart Park because transit doesn't run to Outer East or Outer Southwest may need to park in the Smart Park. So have we done the analysis of what the percentage occupancy of the Smart Parks are?
Oh, yes.
So I'd like to have that information.
The overall occupancy? We still don't know who's...
No, the same kind of tracking that you've been doing on the meters, I'd like to know hourly basis, what's the occupancy of the Smart Parks?
That's where we saw that they're full by about 9:30 in the morning. Is that,
right.
Would that get at that?
I'd like to see that.
Okay.
I don't even know what the right questions to ask in terms of equity. Have you talked with folks at the Office of Equity, or you know, what are the issues?
So that'll be the next slide. But I see Melissa's trying to say.
It's a clarifying point. The Smart Park garages are to serve the short-term customer. They're not really to serve the commuter. So that's part of, we do allow some monthly in the Old Town Garage in particular, but in the downtown core, we don't allow any monthly parking.
A footnote here, I want to return to it. It should be more about customer parking and less about employee parking. It might be a good idea, since we're also trying to foster the renaissance of Old Town, Chinatown, and there are a whole bunch of new employers arriving there, whether they're hotel workers or architects, we might want to, at least on a short-term basis, make some of that Memorial Coliseum parking available on a paid permit basis for employees of that district, since they might just walk across the bridge or catch the streetcar.
Just to go back to what I was asking about, in the Smart Parks, it's not identified who is parking there all day. You don't know whether it's an employee or not.
That's correct. We knew in this case because they had done a survey and actually asked people what was the purpose of their trip. So on that one survey day, we know. But typically,
yes, and
we don't.
The issues of what Commissioner Saltzman was talking about service and retail workers mm-hmm. who are getting in. If your shift starts at 6 o'clock in the yep. morning, or if, conversely, if it ends at 11 o'clock in the evening, it's really hard to get home with transit.
Agreed. So that is actually my last topic. Maybe I should have made it my first, but it's been really a big one. And so under other issues, one of the members of our policy committee and also the subcommittee is a representative of SEIU and raised the issue to us about this very thing you're describing and that you described. So specifically, folks who have an evening shift who are able to come in and park at 5 o'clock, pay for 2 hours of parking, and because we no longer are enforcing, now they've got their trip to work, and that's good. That was the concern, and this I've had several conversations with Nicole and also Felisa. I don't remember. I think that's her boss. Yes. So it's been a really good conversation. I have to take a little bit of a broad approach with you. I've learned a lot, and I may learn more. But at this stage, we've talked a lot about it at the staff, and it's been well informed by input from those conversations. In thinking about how parking plays into conversations about equity and making sure that all of our citizens have the right kind of access, I have to take it a little bit further back, if you don't mind. Part of it has to do with the cost of housing, so really back. Because it's very important that the adding or requiring parking for housing adds $150 to $250 per month in rent for anybody. And so that's an important part of where parking enters into that equity discussion. So that's one, and that's for that broad housing context. Another part of the context is in the overall transportation system and Portland's long time and continuing emphasis of providing a complete multimodal transportation system. That's also very important. Where owning a car isn't required but an option. The AAA estimates that owning a car costs about $9,000 a year. So if we have an environment where that is a choice instead of a requirement, that's an important equity strategy. In our parking system, so I'm narrowing down. In our parking system, we have a smart park system as well as an on-street system. A challenge for me in this topic is that we don't manage the on-street system for employees at all. And if I would be open to entertaining ways to manage it for a specific category of employee, but haven't gotten there. But we do have a smart park garage system, which provides parking after 5 o'clock at a flat rate of $5 from 5 p.m. to 5 a.m. Is that right? Except Old Town on weekends is $6 on Friday and Saturday. So that is important to me because there is an option that is relatively low cost, if one is available. Obviously, it's not available everywhere.
Although, right. Judith, I may jump in. I mean, I think that for the evening hours, when the smart park garages are not as occupied, I can imagine coming up with, instead of $5 a night, we could have like a permit system where you could buy a monthly permit at a really reduced rate if you're, that starts at 5 p.m. or later. So that could be a way of addressing the people who work in low-paying jobs at night. As to the general question, though, of people working in low-paying jobs, or people who aren't rich using the smart parks, I think we need to be careful about reducing the overall rates in the smart parks to sort of an economically inefficient level, because some of the people in the smart parks might be people who don't make very much money and need a place to park during the day. I mean, it's a question of do you throw a big subsidy at everybody because some people might need it?
I really liked how you approached the issue, you know, the larger part too, about how parking costs can impact affordable housing. But you know, I want to stay on this discussion. I mean, we can solve this. We can keep the subsidy. It's a subsidy for low wage workers to have the meters stop at 7. So why don't we just continue that?
Well, I'm not sure, and I only have 5 minutes, so I do want to at least finish this and be prepared to come back on November 5th with a substantial discussion. I want to say that because I actually didn't even get to my primary recommendation, which is that we have a current meter revenue allocation policy. We have a policy of how we manage the meter district, and it provides some guidance in how we manage or how we allocate revenue. It does not provide any provision for considering equity. And I think this is actually a very meaningful policy choice about how we can address it's mathematically disproportionate impact. That cannot be debated. But a strategy may be to think about channeling the revenues to improve the system overall. I have a real problem with thinking that with just not managing the system well. So what I finally concluded for myself anyway, I'm still open-minded, but that managing the system badly is not an equity strategy. And here's one reason why. People who are shift workers or low-wage earners, if they are janitorial or working in restaurants, they have the least flexibility of all. And if our system is not well managed, if it's 99% full when they need to get to work, they don't have an option. You know, a lot of office workers or daytime workers, other workers can be late. It's not as time critical, but I worked in restaurants in Washington, D.C. throughout the 80s. If you have to replace the daytime shift person, you've got to be on time. So a badly managed system is not an equity strategy for them. And I think that for the other class of people that I'm thinking about are a lot of janitorial workers who may have supplies. And if they can't find a parking space to get to their building and have to truck their supplies many blocks, that's just not an equity strategy in my mind. So I want to be thoughtful about it, and I want to be sensitive about the impacts. And if there are better ideas, we are really open. We've been having these conversations quite a bit.
And I appreciate your thinking about this. I guess, and I'm open too, but I just still think that, you know, if we start charging for parking, it's we're taking somebody that's earning $9-$10 an hour and we're making that into $8-something an hour automatically. So, janitorial service workers. And I don't know how much, you know, maybe this is all mythology. I mean, I think what we're saying is true, and I think you would acknowledge as much this is a phenomena that happens. But I don't know if you ever like done just, you know, like blind surveys, you know, put something in somebody's windshield and ask them, you know, are you working downtown? Just, you know, we're doing some statistical gathering.
Well, we would actually might be a little different in the evening. Typically, when we do data analysis and we try to assess the character of the parkers, whether it's shoppers or residents or employees, it's about what time they're arriving and how long they're staying. So we would probably be able to come up with some ideas. We would have to, you know, we haven't really done that. We probably could. So I think I have 5 minutes.
It's,
but I appreciate the conversation.
Yeah, I mean, the discussion will continue.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
So this will be, I'll consider that my preparation for the November 5th hearing. There are a few other next steps. Here you go. So just a review, centers and corridors. We do have a couple more stakeholder advisory committees. Same thing with the central city. So we appreciate we'll be able to take your feedback to them. There is about 35 different scheduled outreach activities to neighborhood associations and other associations over the next couple of months. So you may hear about that. We have a JLA public involvement doing some stakeholder outreach for us. Is that right? Mm-hmm. Stakeholder interviews. So this is a really important time for us to be able to have your feedback, take it into those public community discussions, and then be able to come back. So
can we get a list of the stakeholder advisory committee members?
Yes. Oh, yeah, sure. Thank you.
Commissioner.
Thank you for your time.
You got great work. It covered a lot of material in a short time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good work. Yeah, let's go catch Storm Large. Go sing along with Storm.